Austin and Dave in the morning.
On Center Wellington's best music.
The Grand.
The Grand at 101.
The Grand at 101. You're listening to Swap Talks Live Show every single Tuesday night. Thanks for joining us here on your cold but middle of February.
Yeah, it's a decent day outside.
It's not bad out there at all.
And no snow and just like -1, -2 degrees.
Oh, already?
So we're all set?
Are we going to have a snowstorm this weekend? We've had like 3 or 4 of them every Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, it has to happen on Saturday.
Because
I'm in on Saturday, so I like to make sure that it snows.
Right,
yeah.
Well, that's, yeah.
Keeps people entertained.
Tune into McKim on Saturday morning if you want to find out what's going on. He's here at the crack of, here's 7 o'clock in the morning.
Usually at 7, yeah.
Yeah, we don't like to open the doors till 9, but hey, you're here at 7.
I don't mind standing outside.
Doing a fine job for us in there. So tune into McKim if you want to find out what's going on the weekend and the weather and all that kind of stuff in there. We talk about, we all like to be like armchair adventurous. At least I do. safest place to go. But I've got, Rick's here. You are with the club changed its name. Is that right?
You are right, Rob. Thanks for inviting me. It was never really a club.
It just
had kind of a nice ring to it. But it was the Elora Adventure Club. And if you go to our website, which is still www.ElloraAdventureClub.com, you'll see that tag. But we are now Elora Adventurers. But we do invite other people, not just Elorites, to share their stories.
And what Rick Goodfellow and the folks have been doing is that you, and I find this so interesting, that the draw of the types of people that you get here is, my heavens, we've had people in the Antarctic and all over the world.
You're very right.
Like, it's wow.
You're very right. That sounds like Mr. Ian Evans.
There you go.
My cohort. Yeah. Yes, Ian and I came up with this little initiative about 10 years ago. And lo and behold, 85 or so presentations later, it's just humming along.
And doing a good job. Now, you don't, as I say, we kind of stopped the misnomer about a club, but anybody can go, and you're setting up these things really to invite everybody in for the presentations.
Absolutely. We hold them at the Elora United Church, and I should say a big thank you to the folks at the church. They've been wonderful. We're in the sanctuary of the Elora United Church. It's a very appropriate venue, and we hold them... I can almost say always a Thursday evening, mid-ish month, with the exception of the summer months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so,
you brought...
And no charge other than a toonie. It's really no charge. So it was just a little token.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, you've got quite an event coming up here, and you brought a couple of people that, just a real interesting little trip they've gone on. Tell me who we have here tonight.
We have Dave and Sue Williams, and you are very right. I would call it an extraordinary adventure. And they will, of course, elaborate on it, but they've sailed from Hamilton to Europe and back and up the Hudson River along the east coast of Caribbean, up the east coast of the States. And the thought of that is I am not a sailor by any stretch, and I can share a little I thought it was quite a cute quip the other day. We were chatting about such things. I was mentioning actually Dave and Sue's presentation to a friend, and he said, "Well, you know, I have a fellow who's been in the Navy for years, and this gentleman is very confident out in the ocean, et cetera." And he said, "I'm not," but this fellow said, "Well, you know, I'm never really more than 7 miles from land," and then he points down with his.
So it has
a different kind of
Definitely not very good here. Well, then I welcome Sue and Dave Williams here to the show. Thanks, folks. You're going to be putting on a presentation that Rick's been talking about. You two folks, and I guess in Rick's, when I read it, when Rick's talking about it, he said, a couple of real seasoned sail people here, they've had the sea in their bones since they were born with it. But that's not true. You started in Guelph Lake.
Yes, we started in Guelph Lake. First of all, thanks for having us. We're really delighted to be here, and we're really looking forward to the going to the Elora Adventurers in Elora on February 20th. We're really looking forward to that. Yes, we hope it'll be an interesting presentation, and There's a couple of things that might be interesting to the audience, including the fact that we were not seasoned sailors, which you just mentioned. But first is the magnitude of the trip. It was two transatlantic crossings, plus navigating the St. Lawrence Seaway, plus the U.S. Intercoastal, Chesapeake Bay, Delaware Bay, New York City Harbor, Hudson River, as Rick mentioned, Erie Canal. We started in Hamilton, ended in Hamilton, but that was all done within 1 year. So
1 year?
1 year, which is a bit ambitious.
Oh, yeah.
Needless to say.
So, yeah.
My knees are shaking.
When you get out there, I mean, you're transatlantic. We're talking about, you know, you're going to get anything. Any type of weather that you can think of is going, and plus you're north and south, so you're getting all sorts of different winds and all that kind of stuff happening. You said something kind of interesting to me, because you're in a sailboat, and you said, yeah, one of our powers was, or challenges was that our engines wouldn't work. And I thought, well, you're sailing. Why do you need the engines to work?
Well, okay, so we had to run battery power to run our navigation lights, our computer. We had a small refrigeration system. We had solar panels and wind generators, but we had to run our engine about an hour a day to charge or top up our batteries. And we won't get into this completely because we're going to do this at the presentation in Allura on the 20th. But we had several significant events at sea that caused us some significant problems, including not having an engine for many, many days, which was a battery power.
Now, Sue says, okay, and then you're going to say, why does this get so bad? Because there's the old survival suit thing, okay? So if it all gets so bad that we got to jump in the water, you know, whatever, we got our survival suits. But you guys didn't take survival suits, and for an interesting reason.
No, yes, that's right. We didn't take survival suits. We did prepare for emergencies, but we felt that we wanted to do it differently. So we did have a life raft, a four-person life raft. We had foul weather gear. We had life jackets and things like that. But survival suits, they're supposedly somewhat tricky to put on, and we were concerned about one of us putting it on right and the other one not, and being separated. So that, I mean, it's a weird thing to think about, but we did think that through, and that was a decision we made. The other thing is that we talked about, if you were in a survival suit, would you be able to call for help, and would you want to be just bopping around? So it's a very dark thing to be talking about.
Oh, I know. Yeah, but again, it's the things that when I think about going out on a trip like that, that comes to mind. Now, you're a man and wife team. You're going to be really close, okay, for a couple of months in there. How long, days, months were you on the trip?
We spent a total of 86 days on the ocean, and so that's not intercoastal waterway or anywhere. Yep. That's the Atlantic Ocean. So, and our longest stretch was 23 days.
Okay, so if things go bad there with the relationship, you're really not having a divorce. You're having like a mutiny, okay? And like, I mean, it's like, whoa, you know? So you got to get things kind of settled out, because I would assume that it takes really two people to make this trip work.
Well, you know, we got along really well. But, you know, in terms of my being on the trip, I think one of the problems there was that I was sick a lot of the time, and I think David had to do the lion's share of solving problems, and he took being captain quite seriously. So I think one of the issues about me being there was that it was just one more thing for him to have to worry about, because I was quite sick. But in terms of getting along, we did. We absolutely did. And we had opportunity for other people to join us, and we didn't really want them to.
No, I can understand that. David, when you, and I know you're going to get into this, and this is why people want to come and hear this, but I guess, what was your worst fear before you started out, and did it come close, or was it replaced?
Well, you know, we, as I was going to say, we were inexperienced ocean sailors. We were Lake Ontario sailors, marina to marina, basically. So when we hit tidal water in the St. Lawrence, it was the first time ever in tidal water.
Oh, my.
When we had our first 23-day passage offshore, Our first night on the ocean was our first night ever on the ocean. Oh, so we were inexperienced. So we, in answer to your question, what did we fear? We really didn't know what to fear. What happened, though, were a series of events that actually were a little bit terrifying. And some of those stories are going to be told at our presentation.
Well, let me ask you this. Now that you know some of the real perils that are out there, would you do another one?
Well, you know, yes, we would.
Yeah.
But we can't now. We don't have the money. And we sold our boat, actually, at end of 2018. But had we had the money and the time, you know, I think of that expression, adversity introduces one to oneself. By the time our trip was coming to a close, we were both actually really quite sad it was. We got through a lot together. And had we had the money and time, we would have probably carried on right then, or we would have gone out again. But we had to come back. I had to go to work, and we didn't mention this, but David lost his job before the trip. So he had to get back and find a job.
Uh-huh, yeah. And I hope you don't mind me asking, but people can't see what you look like. But if you're thinking, you know, these are 20, 25-year-old folks, no. You're up there a little past 25.
Yes, yeah. It is actually an interesting story in the sense that Sue never wanted to cross an ocean. That wasn't her dream. It was a childhood dream of mine, and rekindled to be a retirement dream. Then I had a health crisis. This was in my 50s. Then I lost my job, and then the most bizarre thing was Sue woke me up in the middle of the night and said, David, you have to cross an ocean, and I'm going to go with you. So yeah, we weren't young. We were in our 50s, and the other thing was that this was not a dream of Sue's at all, but it became her dream over time.
Now, there's so many things here. So you had a health crisis. Did it resolve itself enough to say, I don't have to worry about this going across the transatlantic?
Well, we probably did worry about it on the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, he had a seizure in the Stone Road Mall Christmas Eve. And the doctor determined it was from stress and sleep deprivation. And so when we were out on the ocean, there was...
Wait a minute. Stress and sleep deprivation. Yes.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So we did worry about that, but it didn't. We didn't worry enough to not carry on.
Man, that is just so inspiring, to be honest, because you just kind of, whatever that is, didn't hold you back. I'm carrying on. And you ended up maybe not feeling too well, but you were taking a lot of notes because you wrote a book. Is it specifically about this trip?
It is about this trip, but it has a subtext about the importance of letting go of adult children to be captains of their own ship. Mm-hmm. And I never intended to write, but we came home and I had a story that I felt I needed to tell. And in terms of notes, people gave me journals and as going away presents, and I wasn't a journal keeper normally, but I did write in those journals just because of the magnitude of the trip. I wasn't thinking about writing a book at all, but so I did write in those journals every single day, and I was very honest because I didn't think it was for anybody else's consumption.
Oh, it's just going to be a journal.
For me, yeah. And also, we had the ability to email underway, so we have several binders of emails, so we were able to capture what was going on in real time from outgoing and incoming emails.
There's an experience that is a keeper.
Yeah,
you know,
and so now all that is in the book,
is
and
in
I'm
the
really
book
pleased
in
about that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so good. And it's out, it's published, it's off on the shelves. What's it called?
It's called Ready to Come About, and it was published by Dundurn Press last May, and I'm delighted to say it's been a Dundurn Press bestseller for over six months.
It's got some good recognition here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and I took a lot of writing courses, and one was with Miriam Taves, who wrote Women Talking and All My Puny Sorrows. And after the course, she asked to read the whole manuscript and endorsed it. And it's been in the Globe and Mail and Canadian Yachting. So it's doing really well. I'm really pleased.
That's very nice. Very nice. Dave, so you're back. Okay, and you're telling people, you know, about some of the trip and the aspects of it. Got anything on the horizon that you're looking at?
Well, in terms of sailing, we're shifting gears. We're coming about once again in a different path, and this time without a boat. I'm just really thrilled that Sue has a new venture, like an ocean crossing. She's into writing, and she's actually writing another book, a novel that has nothing to do with sailing. So I kind of see my sailing days over, but I'm now her biggest fan.
There you go. You know, that's just kind of a nice way to put it. When you were in the ports, you would have met a fair bit of people, but obviously out in the transatlantic, no. But did you come across, you know, other sea travelers?
We came across a lot of interesting characters, and I have captured a few of them in the book. And as a matter of fact, we have stayed in touch with many of the people that are in the book.
That's interesting. So
people were out there for different reasons and different magnitudes of trips, but all very interesting.
Now, north, south, so weather-wise, I mean, south, I'm just kind of thinking it was warm. That's just my no experience information here. Is it that way in the southern part of the trip where it's kind of warm, and the northern you were dealing with, like, really cold stuff?
Well, one of the interesting things about our trip was it was done in a year, so we had all four seasons. But our first transatlantic was high Atlantic. Just south of Newfoundland, and going down the St. Lawrence Seaway in May. It was freezing cold, and into the ocean, freezing cold. Yeah. We had actually many storms on the Atlantic on our first transatlantic crossing. But as you mentioned, on the way back, it was in the southern latitudes towards the Caribbean, and that was much warmer weather. In fact, you didn't have to wear much clothes when you went out to deal with things.
If what I've heard or what I see is that the southern tends to be less wind. I mean, north, yeah, get really bad stuff, but the southern, you get no wind sometimes, and you're just kind of bobbing around.
We had the latitude where we went coming back was in the trade winds. So we actually had pretty steady wind, and they even call it a one-way shoot. And so, and David likes to joke that Christopher Columbus had no choice but to discover the Americas.
But
we didn't have storms. We had that system from the Cape Verdes back.
Yeah, and again, David shows me the map, which you folks can see, and you'll see kind of it looked kind of like straight, and then there's just one kind of like diversion. I said, "What did I get lost? What was that?" But because it is a sailboat, you're at the beck and call of the wind, so you have to tack, and you have to, you know, can't just always go in a straight line.
Yeah. So the first crossing was in variable winds, dead calms, and some stormy weather. The trade winds is pretty constant, but it varies a little bit, and as following winds, you have to go with the wind. So you'd occasionally have to go a bit north or a bit south for maybe 2 or 3 days, depending on the direction of the wind.
Okay.
That accounts for a little jog in our map.
Now, you learned how to, because I think you were giving some courses, to navigate at night. That can't be easy for the layperson to do.
Well, we had GPS.
Oh, of course, yes. Yeah.
So we had a handheld GPS, and then we had a wall-mounted GPS. When you're on such a huge expanse and going in a kind of a general direction, it doesn't even matter if you go off course a little bit.
Yeah, well, I heard that it's not flat. Okay, the world's not flat, and there's no big real risk of it falling off. In fact, at some point, you're going to run into some Americas somewhere in that run. Folks, really interesting, and I can't imagine anybody else would want to come and see this. So, again, when are you going to have this show?
February the 20th, Thursday evening at 7:30 at the Elora United Church. And as you just heard, it's going to be exceptional. Yeah. So I would urge everybody who we do have quite a few who attend on a regular basis, and I expect that will happen again. And we always have some new attendees. So tell your friends.
What's the website, Rick?
www.eloraadventureclub.com.
Folks, thank you very much. Very entertaining. Can't wait to see your presentation, and all the best.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much, Rob.
That's an adventure club that's right here in Center Wellington, and you folks can take part of it. And why not go out there on February the 20th and hear some Sue and Dave and wow, they got some wild
stories.
Yeah,
it'd be a fun time for sure.
Unbelievable stories. All right, when we come back, did I see Bruce in the...
Yeah, Bruce is here.
Are you ready for more of Central Wellington's best music?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You got it. The Grand at 101.